problem which everyone who is in chinuch is exposed to more than once. The approach to the Holocaust. Now, you understand, it's a very complex problem. There is no simple answers. And at the end, you'll have to choose something which you feel comfortable with. It's not enough that this one says this way and the other one says another way. You have to feel comfortable. You have to be able to defend it, honestly defend it. You have to feel that it satisfies you. We have different approaches. Some people approach it in a very simplistic manner. Simple. The Holocaust happened because of the Chatoim. Begeder eini surim b'loy chet. The Jews deserved it. And you can even back it up. You can say, look, you know, some people even predicted this something similar to the Holocaust, which is a fact. If you, the Meshech Chochma in Parshas Mechukoisai actually kimat predicts the Holocaust. V'av gam zois b'yosom b'eretz oyveim lo me'astim v'lo ge'altim, says that at the time when Jews want to, when Jews say Berlin, hi Yerushalayim, the storm will come that will remind them that, that they are Jewish. So that's this is a very simplistic approach. Now, I personally, of course, I mean, very many people approach it that way. No, Jews deserved it. What kind of a kasha is the Holocaust? No kasha. Jews deserved it. You see, the reform movement developed in Germany. So that's this is what happened. So, I would say that it's a very dangerous approach. It's an extremely dangerous approach. Number one, emotionally, it's very, very difficult to accept. If you tell someone who is becoming closer to Yiddishkeit that the Holocaust happened as a result of the Chatoim, they will develop very negative emotions towards the whole relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people. This is how far you go.
About Holocaust as Kiruv, or are you talking about Tamei?
Holocaust as one of the barriers to Kiruv.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I happen to agree with you. That's an approach. It's a bad approach. But in Cincinnati, the Merkaz or the Nazi is there, and also the Merkaz of the Reform is there.
Fine. Okay. Listen, you can make a case for it. There's no question about it. You could make a case for it. But it'll have a lot of flaws. I mean, I don't know if you remember, a few years ago there was a major accident here. A bus with children. Yeah, right. So somebody very important came up with this simplistic approach, and it was a chil Hashem. It was a clear-cut chil Hashem. I don't remember, I think it was Peretz or one of the ministers actually said, what did he say, Shabbos or Shil Shabbos. Petach Tikva, because the bus was from Petach Tikva and then the movies were in Petach Tikva. Yeah. So that's it, cause and effect relationship, that's it, perfect. That was a major Chil Hashem, major Chil Hashem. First of all, it made us look stupid. That's the biggest Chil Hashem. You know, if they make us look stupid, that's already in bed, you know, because anybody who is a Heza, who feels that he's an intellectual, will automatically reject such an approach. Besides, it leaves a lot of gaps in the answer. So why this one yes and this one not? What about there was a Chil Shabbos somewhere else and then it didn't happen? Or going back to the Holocaust, but there were so many Gdolim in Poland. Why did it happen in Poland? It doesn't really answer the question. So besides the emotional problems that you have, the Chil Hashem involved in giving this simplistic approach, because it makes you look like Pesi Yamin Lechol Dovor, that's that gather, it really doesn't answer the question. It really doesn't answer the question. In reality, we have the basic question: Tzadik Veraloi. Tzadik Veraloi. The Gemara says Moshe Rabbeinu asked, And this is why he wrote Sefer Iyov, because Sefer Iyov, you know, according to one sheet in the Gemara, Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it. Why? Because that was the question that he never got an answer for. Tzadik v'raloi, rosho v'toivloi. And Iyov received answers. Iyov received answers from his friends. So the one of his friends, the first one, says to him that Vadai, you know, the Yisurim, you deserve the Yisurim. You just don't know what you did wrong. But Vadai, you deserve the Yisurim. He rejects it. It's not possible. What do you mean, if I don't know what I did wrong? I believe that I did everything perfectly. So what kind of a lesson are the Yisurim? The Yisurim are supposed to be a lesson, something that should teach me to rectify my ways. If there is no way that I can connect the specific actions and the punishment, because they don't seem to correspond, they don't seem to, there doesn't seem to be a connection. So why should Hashem do it? Yeah.
But doesn't it happen that way? A person stubs his toe. He doesn't know what he did wrong, so stubs his toe. He doesn't find out.
Yeah, you know what you're asking, that the Holocaust is not only a question of the Holocaust. Whenever anything bad happens, and the truth of the matter is that it's important, what you say, to recognize that the question of the Holocaust is the same question that a little child, a two-year-old child, Chas v'Sholem, got, you know, run over by a car. Is there a basic difference between the Holocaust, because the Holocaust was 6 million, and this is one? Is there a difference in the question? The question is exactly the same. You're absolutely right. I mean, we don't have an answer to any of this of the problems. So for tzaddik raloi, the lack of correspondence between the sin and the punishment, between yisurim and the chet. Yeah.
Because Eve didn't realize what the yisurim were coming for, the connection between the yisurim and the chetayim doesn't mean necessarily. I mean, what was his understanding? Doesn't mean that the connection definitely does not exist.
Yeah, but the question still applies. So why the system? Why the system that there shouldn't be a correspondence? There should be a correspondence.
In the times before in the Vice, we should go to another and they would ask.
All right, so that we're going to, right away I'll tell you, yeah, we're going to come to this, the differences in development and time. Now let me tell you another approach. Again, that's not what I use personally, because it doesn't satisfy me. There is an approach. What kind of a question is the Holocaust? Don't ask a question on God. I've heard this statement made. What are you asking? Questions on God? Ask questions on human beings. The kasha is not on Hashem. The kasha is on Hitler, not on Hashem. Which basically means that, you know, they had free will. They had free will. So you can't ask a question on the Holocaust. Just the opposite. You have a greater question on natural disasters. Earthquakes, floods, volcanoes, that is a question. But the Holocaust, what kind of a question is it? You have free will, and you can make a case out of this. The interesting thing is that you can make a case out of this. I found the Netziv in the Har Chaim Dovor on Yosef and the brothers. Listen to what he says. It's mamish this argument. It's 100% this argument. Did you see the Har Chaim Dovor? I mentioned it. He says that the brothers said like this: let's throw him into the boar. Let's not kill him. Let's throw him into the boar. We could have killed him. He deserves to be killed. We think he deserves to be killed. He's a Moired B'Malchus. But let's throw him into the boar. Now, if he deserves to be killed, then the Nechoshim will kill him. If he doesn't deserve to be killed, then for sure let him not be killed. He's innocent. You hear the argument? So let's not kill him. Implication. But if we would decide to kill him, then even if he doesn't deserve it, he would die. Do you hear? Says the Netziv, what's pshat? But if he doesn't deserve it, then he wouldn't die even if we shoot him. He says, because Bechiras Odom is lemailo from the Hashgoche. Now, of course, right away he says, but of course, it's not that the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Hashgoche of the Ribbono Shel Olam can't overcome Bechira. But that is the system, that the Hashgoche leaves room for Bechira. That's what he says. So therefore, if the brothers would have chosen to kill Yosef, so even if Hashem doesn't want him to die, he would die because they chose to kill him. Do you hear? So is Period. That's what he says. So therefore, if the brothers would have chosen to kill Yosef, so even if Hashem doesn't want him to die, he would die because they chose to kill him. Do you hear? So isn't the Netziv saying that Bechira So'odom is beyond question? Of course he adds at the end that sometimes the Ribbono Shel'olam goes even beyond Bechira So'odom when he absolutely doesn't want it to happen. But in general, you can say it. So, of course, it still remains the kasha. Since the Ribbono Shel'olam could decide to overcome Bechira So'odom, why didn't he by the Holocaust? So, it's an answer, it's a partial answer, but again, it doesn't satisfy.
It's true that on a natural disaster, the kasha would be even bigger. Well, it didn't happen through a natural disaster, 6 million people would be killed. This was surely a decree on Klal Yisrael. If it would have been through a volcano, the kasha...
How do you know it's a decree on Klal Yisrael? Maybe it was the free will, the Bechira Chofshis of the Nazis.
No,
how do you know?
I'm asking you that if it would have been through a disaster, the kasha would have been so much easier to ask.
Correct. But remember, the Netziv says that if a person dies because somebody shot him, you can say, where is the Hashgoche? I don't follow. Why? Because it's 6 million and not one, you mean?
Because 6 million was all Eden. It wasn't like... It happened to us. It didn't happen that Stam was the people that killed, like in Beijing, that just came and shot whoever was there. Mm-hmm. They went to look for the Jews.
I don't hear it so clearly. What do you mean? But they chose to kill the Jews besides killing the Russians and the Gypsies? I mean, I don't hear it so clear as an argument against.
It's an argument against. It's an argument that it would have been a natural disaster. It would have been a big disaster.
Oh,
you can't say that the kasha doesn't, because a human did it, the kasha doesn't begin.
Why not? I mean, they why not? Why can't you say that? Bechire is lemailo me'ashgoche. The Hashgoche doesn't go where Bechirev goes in. Why can't you say? Lu Yetzur, you accept this principle that the Netziv says, which is clear that he's right. I mean, there are many, many riots. Afterwards, I started to look, I saw it clearly in another Meforshim too.
Just to ask Rufa and think itself, what about like a Kol Mene Shemayim?
Chutz Meyira Shemayim. Meyira Shemayim means Bechirev. Hakol b'day shomayim, chutz mibchire, yira shomayim is bechire. The other person's bechire affects this person. Why not?
So it's really like outside of the realm of hashkacha.
That's what the Netziv is saying. Again, I clarify. He doesn't mean that Hashem couldn't change that. He couldn't intervene. But as a rule, he does not intervene.
So innocent people that are dying.
Exactly. This is what comes out according to the Netziv. I know it's shocking, but the Netziv says it. The Netziv says it. Right.
Doesn't Ramban say that even that degree of hashkacha of not to interfere is a direct individual decision of the hashkacha? It's not shot that sometimes the Ribbono Shel Olam decides to interfere. It's that in every case he decides whether to interfere or not to interfere. And even if he decides not to interfere, that's a direct decision.
That's not what he says. He says that the system is the Bechira overcomes Hashgoche.
No, I'm saying the Ramban. The Ramban.
Oh, the Ramban?
The Ramban, I believe, says that even the decision to let natural disasters take their course.
Mikre, yeah.
That is a direct, deliberate decision of the Hashgoche to allow it to happen.
I don't know where you saw the Ramban, but the Ramban that I remember is exactly the opposite. It says very often when Hashem has no reasons to intervene, he says he leaves it up to Mikre. And he says, and this is why B'nai Binyamin, remember in the war... of the B'nai Binyamin against the rest of Klal Yisrael, B'nai Binyamin won. Why? Because it was Mikre. The Ramban actually says it. It was Mikre. Hashem didn't intervene. So the fact was that there were better fighters, so the better fighter will win, unless Hashem decides to intervene. That's the Ramban I remember. I don't know which Ramban is.
I remember, I have to check it out.
Yeah.
There's a stir between two Rambans. The Ramban in Bol and the
Ramban. Yeah, but you are saying that Mikre, he's a direct intervention.
According to this Netziv, there's some emes to
the Netziv.
Some emes to what Stalin said, that Hashem is with the most mighty armies. I mean, Hashem just doesn't interfere with the most.
Well,
I mean, and
as a rule, it's true. As a rule, the stronger will win. As a rule, the stronger will win. Not because Hashem will intervene. If Hashem will intervene, the weaker will win. If he doesn't intervene, the Ramban says it. The reason why Bnei Midyomen won, because he left it Alpi Amikra. Alpi Mikre, he says, because there was no reason, there weren't enough Schusim in Klal Yisrael to beat the Binyaminites, and therefore the Binyamin people were better, and therefore they won. Nachinam, why not? There's an argument for it.
What did you ask me when you said Kulun Nechiyah Shulachani Elohim Lefneichem? Why? It was the brother's Bechira to sell him down to the Ishmaelites to send him to Mitzrayim.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So why did Yosef say Kulun Nechiyah Shulachani Elohim Lefneichem? Atem Shalachtem Meisi Lefneichem.
What do you mean? Why punct the Hashgoche came out that the caravan was punct passing by there? That's for sure Hashgoche. That they had a chance to sell it, which means that the details of how the Bechira is presented is of course Hashem's doing. So now in retrospect I see that you made it happen, that you gave them the choice. So if Hashem gave him the choice to sell me, it must be because Hashem wanted me to be sold.
But it's still their bechir whether to sell him or not to sell him.
Definitely. That we can't deny their bechir in that.
So then why?
Except that why? What did Hashem present them with such a bechir? That punkt that the Orchas Ishmaelim will pass by. That is for sure a sign from heaven, according to Yosef. Now let me tell you how I approached it. As a matter of fact, not long ago, I actually gave the theme was, I gave a lecture on the following theme. Earthquakes, I forgot even what it was, floods and earthquakes, I think. Is there a flaw in God's creation? This is the way I called the lecture. Is there a flaw in God's creation? So I told the people that Be'etzem, you have to understand that there are four concepts that we have to understand. The first problem is Toi V'ra, the existence of Ra in the world. You know that is a major problem, the existence of Ra in the world, yeah. Oh, it's exactly what we're doing. That's exactly what we're doing. The existence of Ra in the world is a great problem because there is a problem, a logical problem here. Hashem creates everything. If not, he's not Hashem. Hashem must create everything. Everything which exists is created by Hashem. Ra exists. Hashem is Toiv, he can't possibly create Ra. So how can Ra exist? Here, how do you put together the three principles? Hashem creates everything. Ra exists. Hashem can't possibly create Ra. How do you put it together? So it's a problem. So the approach that you have, but derech klal is, you find it in the Gemara, I'll mention right away which Gemaras, which are a clear indication of the approach, that Be'etzem Ra doesn't have its own existence. It's just the other side of Toiv. Ra is the other side of Toiv, like the Gemara says, by Oyer and Choshech. The Shem Hashem is not mentioned next to Choshech, only next to Oyer. Right? Well, how does it say in the Posuk? What does it say in the Posuk? Vayikro Elohim lo Oyer Yoim. Shem Hashem is mentioned next to Oyer. Vela Choshech korolai lo Shem Hashem is not mentioned. The same way that Choshech is a necessity of Oyer, because nothing can exist without its opposite existing. Nothing can exist conceptually. You can't conceptualize anything unless you are able to define it by its not being its opposite.
Also in the bracha, Yotze or Barei Choshech.
I'm going to come to the bracha right away. I'm going to come to the bracha right away, which is very difficult because there is a brio in it's not Barei Choshech, you know.
It's
Barei Ra.
Yotze is more active than
So we're going to come to it. It says Yetziro by Oyer and brio, according to our Nusach in Choshech, but according to the source in Ishaya, it's by Ra. There is a Bri of Ra. What does it mean, the Bri of Ra? So it means that Hashem created it, but there is no direct action of creating Ra. It's an outcome of the creation of Toiv. It's the same way that, let's say, there would be no existence of darkness in the world. Would we know that now it's light? Would we be able to grasp the concept of light if it's not defined by not being dark? Impossible. You wouldn't even know it's light. You wouldn't know that it has a name. Same way, would you be able to define happiness If everybody is in a constant state of happiness, nobody would be happy. Because happiness is defined by its not being unhappiness. So sadness comes into the world because happiness is there. If there would be no sickness in the world, the word health wouldn't make any sense at all. Meaning, it's not child to say you would be healthy, we would all be healthy. We would all be in a state that it's not healthy, not healthy. There is nothing that defines health if the opposite doesn't exist. Therefore, the creation of Choshech, what the Gemara says, Shem Hashem is not mentioned by Choshech, it means that the direct creation is Or. Choshech is there in order to define Or. Same thing is with Tov and Ra, like the Gemara says. You know, the Gemara's shocking statement. In the sixth day, that Hashem saw Tov Me'oid. Says the Yalkut Shimoni here on the spot. Toiv ze hayetzer toiv, me'oid ze hayetzer hore. Good is good, but very good, that's bad. How do you understand it? Simple. Because the moment you establish scales of good, there is toiv, toiv me'oid, very, very good. What differentiates between toiv and toiv me'oid? What must there be mixed into toiv not to make it toiv me'oid? Obviously something which is the opposite of toiv. What is that opposite of toiv? Ra, simple. Which means that ra exists because toiv exists. So the existence of ra is a necessity of God's creation of toiv. Okay? Therefore you see, for instance, that our attitude towards ra is not as an independent power, Ra. Ra and Toiv struggle against each other. No, we believe that Ra and Toiv are on the same team. Except they work from two different angles. Like the Malbim says by Iov, Vayovoi gama soten besoichom. What kind of a meeting did they have? Hashem and his Malochim. By Iov, in the beginning of Iov, what does it say there? That Hashem had a meeting with his Malochim. Vayovoy gama soten besoichom. What is the soten doing on the wrong side? Isn't he working against the establishment? No, says the Malbim. He's working for the establishment, but on the other side, by challenging the toiv to become better. The goal of Ra is to challenge the toiv to become better than that. If there would be no Ra, there would be no challenge. No challenge, no toiv meoy. So this is the purpose of Ra in the world.
Why can't there be existence of an absolute?
What do you mean? Absolute
toiv?
Without mixture of the opposite?
You're saying the fact that there's toiv me'od and the scale of toiv implies a mixture of ra.
That's the Gemara, that the Midrash says, yeah.
But you said that the existence of something
demands the existence of the other.
Why can't you have an absolute?
You can't, because there. What do you mean?
Why can't you have an absolute?
That's only useful for malachim, though. It has no meaning for people.
You won't be happy.
There is no challenge. The challenge is overcoming. Bechira demands a challenge. And challenge demands the alternative. The alternative of toiv is the other side of Israel.
Adam Arishon had a challenge before there was Ra.
Obviously, even before the chait, Ra was there. It was there. Begeder nochosh, begeder machshovo, nochosh, nichush. But it was there. You can't have a world with a human being with free will without a nochosh. You must have a nochosh. So gusso, it was a yetzer horem in bachutz. But so what? But there has to be there something. Where was the nochosh created? Because the toiv was created, so the nochosh has to be created. There can be a toiv. There can be toiv me'oid without a nochosh. There has to be a nochosh.
It could be, but Hashem decided to make the world this
way. No, you can't. You can't. It's not that you could be.
Philosophically, it's possible.
It's impossible. Can Hashem make a 2 and 2 should be 5? Impossible. It's not. You see, it's a flaw to say that you are limiting what Hashem.
That's calling Hashem infinite.
That's a flaw. That's a semantic flaw. I mean, we won't go into it. Can Hashem create a stone that he himself can't lift? You remember the famous. It's a flaw.
Create himself not to exist.
Well. Right. He can't. Can he create a stone that he himself can't lift? No, he can't. That's... Is that a limitation? No. It's just a double... What?
He can't be illogical.
Again?
Who can't be illogical.
Exactly. He can't be illogical. Well, that's a limitation. Not at all. That's a double negative. You understand?
Right,
it's a semantic flaw.
That's only relative to our perception, though. I mean, according to...
No, it's not.
If it wasn't trying to create a Tov which is perceptible by the human race, it wouldn't be necessary to make a counterpart of Ra. In order to make it perceptible.
Or in other words, it wouldn't be a Tov. Then it wouldn't be Tov, the way we define Tov. I mean, that is what... Right. Okay.
Copy him, okay. It would right. Be still Tov.
All right. Okay. Now, let's go on to the next concept. So, Toiv v'ro is defined. Ro is there as a challenge for Toiv. Next concept. Yeah.
Are you saying Ra is a positive, has a positive existence, or it's the absence of Toiv?
Well, it has a positive existence, and if we have a chance, we even will define what is the positive existence of Ra. Next concept.
Could you just answer the positive existence of Ra? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Makes sense.
Yes, but more. It even has an independent existence, but that we'll have to wait. Let's now. There's another concept. There is a concept of din and a concept of rachamim. Chazal say that Hashem wanted to create in the beginning the world bedin. Now, what would it mean? Breishis bor Elohim. Elohim is din. What would a world look like in a perfect din system? In a perfect din system, Ra is there as an immediate reaction to your Ra. Immediate. There are no second chances. It's by its very definition a perfect world because anything imperfect self-destroys. That is the system of Din. Okay? The Gemara says that Hashem decided, then it's not a world. It has no existence. You must add the Midas Horachamim. So then afterwards, in the second chapter of Bereishis, it says, Hashem Elohim, Yud Kei Vov Kei. Rachamim, Badin, together. Now, let's define Rachamim without Din. Without Din. Here it says that it's a combination of both. But let's define what would be Rachamim without Din. Rachamim without Din would be that Hashem keeps postponing the punishment. Keeps giving us credit. Here. We do an Avera. Okay, give him a chance. Again, we do an aver. Okay, vayter rachamim. Again, another chance. More rachamim. Okay, again. It would be
chance for what?
For doing tshuva, for rectifying it. Again.
Responding what? Responding to din.
Right, but not with midas adin. You see, the din means the eventual evening out, balancing of everything. But let's say theoretically that there would be no combination of din and rachamim. I'm just trying to point out what would be rachamim without din, without the mixture of the two, in order to understand what the mixture means. Rachamim without din is the endless postponement. It's like a person goes into a bank and the bank tells him you can borrow infinitely, right? We just add it to your account. So is there any moment of reckoning? There is none, because whenever you come to that, there is a postponement, right? We in South America, you know, you South American guys, that's what they did. They figured, what do you mean, you can borrow endlessly. It's a constant, endless rachamim. That's what it is. Now, what would happen in a complete rachamim system? There is no reaction to sin. Eventually, there is no incentive not to sin. It's a chaotic world. In a complete rachamim world, it's a complete chaotic world. True? No cause and effect relationship between Hashem's reaction and our actions. So now that there is a combination of din and rachamim, so now there is a tension. Hashem gives you credit. Okay? You borrow again. Okay? Add it again. But there is a moment of reckoning. This is when din and rachamim come together. Now, let's go on to the next concept, right? So we spoke about Toiv v'ro, we spoke about Din and Rachamim. Now we're going to talk about Gilui Shechino and Hester Ponim. That's the next concept that we have to understand. What does it mean, Gilui Shechino and Hester Ponim? According to our tradition, there was a major change in the Purim time after the destruction of the first temple. We can describe the level of the relationship between Hashem and the Jews during the first temple as a Gilui Shechino. You can come into the Beis Hamikdash and you can actually sense the Gilui Shechino. You can sense the Shechino. It was the Shekhinah's presence was obvious. After the destruction of the first temple, the Shekhinah was there, but the Hester Ponim. Hester Ponim. What does Hester Ponim mean? Hester Ponim means that you don't see the cause and effect relationship of God's intervention in the world. You don't see it clearly. The Shem Hashem is not mentioned in Megillas Esther. Why? Because the idea is you have to search for Hashem's intervention. It's not obvious anymore. During the Beis Hamikdash Rishon, it was obvious. But of course, we are just talking about extreme situations. Complete Esther Ponim and complete Gilui Shechino. In reality, the situation is that it's always a combination. For instance, if you compare the Gilui Shechino of the level of the Jews in the Midbar as compared to the Gilui Shechino in Bais Rishon, what must you say? That Legabe, the Midbar, Bais Rishon is a Hester Ponim. It's a relative concept. Do you follow what I'm saying? Hester Ponim and Gilui Shechino are relative concepts. Because Gilui Shechino in its complete sense is Din. Do you follow what I'm saying? Gilui Shechino, complete Gilui Shechino, complete absolute sense of the intervention of Hashem would be Din. It would be too immediate. Rachamim naturally creates a gap. Rachamim creates a gap. When the gap is too wide, to the point that we define it, we lost sight of the connection. Oh, at that point it becomes Hester Ponim. And Hester Ponim also has its extreme point, and the point when Hester Ponim is not complete. It's a relative term, but in its extremes, the one extreme is called Hester Ponim, which means that you can't see at all cause and effect relationship, and the other extreme is Gilui Shechino. And that is, now we come to the fourth, let me just finish the fourth concept and then we'll just come to the application. The fourth concept that we have to,
I didn't get those connections. How you want
Gilui Shechino and Hester Ponim? You see, the point is like this. Gilui Shechino, in its extreme form, Gilui Shechino, which means the extreme awareness of the presence of God, must come together with immediate reaction.
Why can the bank manager postpone it loans?
At that moment, when it's postponed, we don't see the reaction. Right? It's postponed. We don't see a reaction. He's not collecting the money from me.
That's nice.
You can have a Gilui Shechino, a positive Gilui Shechino. The bank manager gives you
a
letter that he's giving you a gift.
I have time to pay back, but right? The day of reckoning? Sure. But to me, what is it? Of course, it's Hester Ponim. It's also a Gilui Shechino. But to me, the observer, what will I see in the cause and effect relationship between my sins and the punishment? What will I see? A gap.
When the monk came down, that was Din, that was Rachamim.
That was Gilui Shechino. Gilui Shechino. No. You see, the point is like this. Of course, even the situation of the Jews in the Midbar is Rachamim with Din. It is Rachamim with Din. But when it says, for instance, by in the Sparsus HaShavua, by Taveiro, by Kibros HaTaivo, what was that? That was Din, which means that it was much closer to Din. The situation of the relationship between Hashem and the Jews in the Midbar is much closer to Din. I'm not saying there was no Rachamim. The system couldn't work without Rachamim. But it's much closer to Din, and therefore much closer to Gilui Shechino, or the other way around. Because it was much closer to Gilui Shechino, therefore it was much closer to Din than to Rachamim. In the range between the extremes of Din and Rachamim, the situation of the Jews in the Midbar is much closer to Din. Of course with Rachamim. But it's closer to Din. This is why the reaction of Hashem is much stricter. But this is why the Gilui Shechino is much more obvious. This is why they can stay with the Onon. This is why they can have the water. Do you hear the relationship? The closer you are to Din, the closer you are to the immediate reaction to the closeness of Hashem.
So I think the thing that maybe some people are missing is that Din doesn't necessarily impression of Din doesn't imply punishment. It implies instantaneous retribution, whether for the good or the bad.
Exactly.
Instantaneous, the same as
Exactly. Now, and then we come to the final concept: Hashgocho and Mikre. Hashgocho and Mikre. The natural result of this system is that the extreme of din which brings Gilui Shechina makes you, gives you a perception of Hashgocho. And the other side, the closer you are to the other extreme, gives you the perception of Mikre. What does it mean? That the more credit Hashem gives us. And why does He give us credit? Because we ask for credit. If we would pay back our loans, we wouldn't need more credit. The more credit we ask for, which means the more we sin, and then afterwards we see, ah, Hashem is not reacting. I ate my first ham sandwich and nothing happened. No, the lightning didn't strike me. Okay, so I'll eat the next one. And then I'll eat the next one. So I keep adding. So what happens in this situation? In this situation, the distancing is greater. The more I sin, in order that Hashem shouldn't react, He has to distance Himself more. He has to make Himself seem that He doesn't see us. So it's built into the system that every once in a while He has to pay me back. Right? It has to come a day of reckoning, because remember, there is a din mixed in rachamim. But that itself will give us the perception of pure mikre. Let's put it in the right words. It's intentional randomness will be the result of the system. Intentional randomness. What does it mean? In our perception, it's pure random. Because if we wouldn't see it as random, if we would see the cause and effect relationship, then we would be in the system of Din, of Gilui Shechina. We are not in that system anymore. We asked, we turned the system towards the other direction, away from Din and towards Rachamim. Therefore, there is more hesterponim. Therefore, there is more mikre. And mikre means intentional randomness. So therefore, the randomness of tragic events is part of the system. Now, let me just conclude the main ideas, and then I'll take questions, because I don't think we'll be able to cover everything. Therefore, let's now go on to the final statement. We know that in a perfect world, nature is 100% loyal to man. We know that. Nature was created to serve man. Nature is supposed to serve man in a perfect form. He's supposed to be the perfect servant of man. When is the first time that we see that nature rebels against man? What? Even before that, Odom Orisha, when he says, Koitz v'dardar tatzmiach, that's after the sin. Why? You cease to be the perfect servant of God, nature will cease to be your perfect servant. But in a perfect world, what about if we do fulfill the commandments? Then nature will be perfect to you. Everything will be perfect. What about if you turn away from God, you cease to be a perfect servant of God, nature will react accordingly. Therefore, our present relationship with nature is an antagonistic relationship. We try to dominate nature, and nature every once in a while says, I'll show you who is boss. I am boss, not you. Why? Because you can only dominate me, says nature, if you serve your purpose in the world. Your purpose in the world is to be an Eved Hashem. Then if you're a perfect Eved Hashem, I'll be a perfect Eved to you, says nature. You cease to be an Eved Hashem, I'll cease to be your Eved. You can try to dominate me, but every once in a while, I will show you who is boss. So earthquakes and volcanoes are just nature showing man who is boss. Now, therefore, in conclusion, if we ask, who is at fault for earthquakes and volcanoes and floods? Can you blame God? Well, God created the system. The system was created for the purpose of toiv. If we would use it properly, then the system wouldn't work against us. But you can't blame Hashem when He creates a system that He warns us that we shouldn't abuse it, because the system will work against you, and then we are surprised then when the system actually does work against us. So therefore, when we say, why do earthquakes happen? It's man's fault. It's not Hashem's fault. That's man's fault. If man would be perfect, then it wouldn't happen. And that's the real pshat. You know, the problem is the Gemara. The Gemara, it says, a person who sees Isurim boim olov imashme ifashfesh b'maisov. What does it mean? There is a sin, you have to look for the reasons. The surface interpretation of this portion of the Gemara is that you will find the reason. That there is a reason. There is a direct cause and effect relationship. That is, you know, that is the justification for all those that say, oh, there is a Holocaust. Obviously, it's a reaction to the sin. Right? The Jews became Reformed Jews. Reform movement developed. Therefore, the Jews were punished. In reality, all the Gemara is telling you here, yifashveis b'masov, if something bad happens in the world, ultimately, it's our fault. Because if we would be perfect, it wouldn't happen. Right? This is exactly what the Gemara says concerning the Kohen Godel and why the Roitzeach B'Shoyge goes out when the Kohen Godel dies. Right? Why? It's Kohen Godel's fault that the man killed B'Shoyge. If the Kohen Godel would be perfect, who knows how he would influence the rest of the world? And perhaps, if the rest of the world would be perfect, accidents wouldn't happen. Not perhaps, for sure. If the Kohen Godel would be perfect and he would teach the world perfectly and the world would be perfect, there wouldn't be such a thing as nature fighting men, antagonizing men. It can't happen. Okay? So, this is the approach. Basically, this is the approach. Now, if we have the time, I'll tell you another yisoid, which is a crucial yisoid here, but I'll leave it open for questions. We'll see if there's later.
What's the difference between
Mikra and Hesapanim? When you react to that, Mikra is just our perception of it. Mikra, things happen by random. At random. Automatically. Automatically. Hesapanim means that eventually events will look like Mikra.
Really, it's the same idea, Hesapanim and Mikra.
It's all right. It's one is the outcome of the other. Mikra is our perception. Hesapanim is the way Hashem does it.
Are you using this series of ideas to explain Holocaust?
So I used it to explain tragic events now. So the point is like this. If you accept the first answer that, you know, don't blame God, blame Hitler, fine, then you have no kashis. But if you say, yeah, but Hashem has to allow it to happen. So how can it happen? So if you say, good, so why does Hashem allow an earthquake in a place that kills hundreds of thousands of people? The same question. Which means, why does Hashem allow tragic events to happen without allowing us to make the direct connection of cause and effect that will clarify things? Once we accept the system, we are not giving any answers. We are saying, the system is there. We know the system. The events fit the system. That's all the answer is. We are not answering the question why the system is this way. All we are trying to clarify is, don't be surprised by these events. The Holocaust doesn't break away from the system. It's not a unique situation. It fits perfectly into the system. Do we give an answer? That's not an answer to the Holocaust. It's not an answer of why the system is this way. But let's not be surprised. This is the system.
Yeah. August can be compared to Kohen Gadol to the rest of the world.
Of course.
So would you say that there's a particular... tell people this particular prize resting on Klal Yisrael for the tragedies and
yeah.
So
you know there is a Gemara that says it. I don't remember where in Yevomis, in the Peis, in the Samas, the Gemara says, Ein Puronios Bo La'olam Elo Bishvil Yisrael. Any an earthquake in somewhere in Afghanistan, wherever it is, Jews' fault. What does it mean? That it's directly our fault? Like the Kohen Godel. If we would be better, it wouldn't happen. If we would be better teachers, the disciples would be better, and the whole world would be better, and naturally tragedies wouldn't happen.
So maybe that's the underlying reason for anti-Semitism.
100%. 100%.
So they know that inside.
Sure. We believe that anti-Semitism has a source in Emes, because you know that we believe that nothing can be maintained, an opinion can be maintained for a long term without an Emes in it, because Sheker ain't lo raglaim, which means Sheker can't move. You can have an immediate reaction of pure Sheker. But when you see a sheker maintaining itself, there must be a seed of MS in it. What is the MS of anti-Semitism? What do anti-Semites claim? Our problems stem from the Jews. That's what the Nazis said. Right? All the problems of the world stem from the Jews. Get rid of the Jews. Right? So, the conclusion, we argue. That's not the way you rectify it. But
the conclusion to solve that problem also lasted for 2,000 years.
The getting...
as of the solution to
all right, okay, but what's the MS of the argument? The MS of the argument, they are absolutely right. If we would be better, the world would be better. Nothing, the world is most sensitive to the matzav of the Jewish people. Nature is absolutely sensitive to the matzav of the Jewish people. We become better, there will be less earthquake. That's a guarantee. That.
So who does the
chesmuk?
Only
Eden
does
the chesmuk
also with
the
Afghans?
No question about it. We are just central to his chesbonness. Of course.
The Afghan standings have to be Avdei Hashem also?
Of course. Every human being was created in order to be an Eved Hashem. What? Who told them? Fine. It's another question. It's another question. The Rambam says a goy can't say that nobody taught me. The Rambam passes this way. The Gemara says in Makkes. Right? People are learning Makkes. By a goy, he can say if that he's a shoygeg because nobody taught him. A Jew can say, a goy can't say it because all the Sheva mitzvahs bnei noyach are intuitive mitzvahs. No, not at all. I mean, if that would be the case, then we would have a perfect din. Then we would have a gilui shchino. That wouldn't be the system. The system is, you see, the moment you concentrate the reaction of Hashem to the ones who really are responsible, you are creating again a system of din that we don't deserve.
Explain that when there's a plane crash and 400 people die, and all those 400 people are supposed to die.
It's the mikre which is intentional. It's part of the system. That mikre is part of the system.
It is still true that when this thing happens to this group of people, it was Magia Lahem to this group of people. It's just that it was also Magia to several other groups of people that it didn't happen to because of Rachamim. But this punishment, then Afanami, the Chayra, did belong to these people. It's just that why were they the ones who got punished? And
not necessarily. You see, that ultimate question you'll never answer. So why them? Your question assumes a system of deen. You understand why? It's not a valid question. No, the moment you accept this system, your question becomes invalid. No, I want you to understand clearly this because this is the crucial point. You see, after the system you ask, but why did this 40 people die in this crash? Obviously, it's part of the system, but why this 40, not another 40? If we would have the answer, we wouldn't have the system.
I understood the way we were explaining it was that the marshal, 40 things might happen, and each one of them the ma'aseh deserves a punishment. But Rachamim says, no, on 39 of them I'll be mochel for the time being, and on one of them I'll punish. But that one deserved punishment. That one deserved punishment. Elamah, we don't see any din, we don't see any hashkacha in it, because if that one deserved punishment, why didn't the others?
Exactly.
So it looks like mikra. But Einach and Nami, look at that single event deserved punishment in that particular
way. You mean, according to ultimate justice, all the mikrim in the world have a reason. That's what you're saying. We believe that. But that is called a different type of mishpat. That mishpat we don't talk about. It's like it says by the Meforshim, when Avraham Avinu says, Ashoifet kol ha'aretz lo yaseh mishpat. What kind of a question is it? Ashoifet kol ha'aretz lo yaseh mishpat. It means, obviously your mishpat is a mishpat elyon, is a mishpat elyon that everything fits in. It's fine. But according to our perception of justice, lo yaseh mishpat according to us, it has to fit in according to our system. That's what Avraham Avinu claimed. That what you do in this world must be a mishpat according to our perception. In your perception, I know it will fit in. He's talking to Hashem. He has no doubts that if Hashem decides yes to destroy Sodom and Amorah with all the tzaddikim, it will be a perfectly mishpat. But he's saying according to our perception, we deal with our perception. Right?
So to sum it all up, your Terence is not that we don't know, but we can't know.
It's built into the system that we can't know because we developed the system. The system was proposed to us. What?
We're back to the crash we started off with.
That
we can't know. So how can Hashem give us punishments if we can't know why we deserve it?
Exactly. So if we would say that there is a perfect system, then you have a question. How can Hashem give us punishments? What about if it fits into the system? Hashem gives us the punishments in order to make us aware that the system is distorted. We are turning too far away from Gilui Shechino, from Din. And therefore, we should become better Jews so that Hashem's reaction should be more immediate.
But we don't know what we did wrong.
What do you mean? We did wrong that we allowed the system to deteriorate that way. That's what we did wrong. Not that we did wrong in the direct cause and effect relationship between the punishment and us specifically that we did. We did wrong that there is an unintentional randomness. We did wrong that we can't give an answer why these 40 people died and those other 40 people didn't die. That in itself is the lesson to us that we are creating a monster. We are creating a separation between Hashem and the people in the world. That itself is the lesson.
But,
according to the system, yeah.
I see the Gemara Bracha says that in the case of the Tana, I don't remember which one, whose wine turned to vinegar. So, Lemaisa, he was able to identify, after some prodding, where his wrongdoing lay. He
right.
corrected it, and the problem
right.
Corrected
but
itself.
You saw Toises over there. Toises says, how did it occur to them? Remember, when he became sour, it must be because he cheated his worker. So how do they know? Says Toises, obviously they knew before. But, you know, they connected it because they knew it. The point is a very important point that Toises is making, which means if the system really works, then they should have been able to figure it out without knowing. You understand? The point is, the system doesn't really work. But there is an obligation. I have the obligation. Remember, I mean,
I understand that Toises was only saying how his colleagues could have the temerity to start pointing the finger at him.
Why not? I mean, if you say, any surim beloy chait, what's this discussion? Right. What's this discussion? How could they say that if somebody's wine went sour, that obviously he cheated somebody, that he did something wrong in business?
He knows it. He knows the one whose wine turned to vinegar also knows Eini Surim Belo Chet.
Sure.
So I assume that Tosfos was just saying how they could have the chutzpah to point this out.
Why not?
But doesn't he know it himself?
Oh, you mean that's what you mean? Because since he knows
it himself, Elamai, they realize he must have overlooked it, or he must have thought, as he said, oh, he's a god of anyway, so I'm justified. Say,
so,
wait a minute.
So say the same thing? So why do you need an answer that for sure they knew beforehand, they were just looking for an opportunity to point it out to him? Say simple. Obviously he overlooked it. And they know for sure any surim b'leichet, he must have been dishonest. This is how they knew he was dishonest. Why does Tosos have to give such a practical answer that they knew something that we don't know?
Because they didn't want to be like the friends of Eo, who Stam were pointing.
So what? It's not so clear. It's not so clear. I would rather say the obligation of Fashres Bemaisov is that I have the obligation. Something wrong happened to me. I have the obligation to think. If I stubbed my toe, I have the obligation to think, did I walk to the wrong place in the last week? I have the obligation to make the connections. Not because I'm saying that there is a cause and effect relationship. Because it's part of my chiyuv as a Jew to learn from everything that happens to me.
So
that is part of my chiyuv.
According to this, we have to reinterpret. I mentioned this once today. We have to reinterpret all of the hespedim that have ever been uttered. Certainly hespedim of kashrut people. Where the maspid calls upon the tzibur to get its act together, because when gedolim are taken, tzadikim are taken, so it's a symbol that the generation has to get its act together. And, particularly when a misfortune strikes in a particular neighborhood or something, so the Rav says the neighborhood has this chait and this chait.
Right.
So we have to reinterpret all of these hespedim and all of these calls to tshuva as really just a kind of a subterfuge. The Rav, or the Maspid, is simply using this
see,
as a forum.
It's very dangerous talk, what you're saying.
I
you
understand.
See, it's very, very dangerous. But the problem with over-sophistication, the problem with over-sophistication is, that is exactly the problem. That's why the people were against the Mora Nebuchim. It's very, it's very dangerous to become over-sophisticated, because you lose the, it stops functioning. What should function? It only functions when you allow yourself to be a simple person. That's why I tell you about the Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim was a poshet Jew. That's how he defined himself. But there are two types of poshet Jews. There is a poshet Jew before he becomes sophisticated, and there is another pashtas that comes as a result of sophistication. He becomes so sophisticated that eventually become a poshet Jew. That's the Chofetz Chaim, right?
This is the Rambam meant also, that the philosophical speculation should bring him to a madrega where he can
pashtas.
Exactly.
That's the thing. That is the point. When you come to that pashtus above it, you go one step beyond what you're saying. And you don't think that way. Because you know that if you do think that way, it won't work.
Okay, so I'm not like the Chofetz Chaim yet.
Exactly.
At this
Madrega, but you have left the lower pashtus and you haven't reached it. You know what I mean?
What was exactly wrong?
It's dangerous.
What was wrong with that, what Rashi said exactly? What was it? What was the danger?
Of what?
What Rashi just
you
said.
See, let's leave for another time. It's not murder. I mean, you're mature human beings, you know, but still, I mean, it's... The complication is, if you take this statement as being yifashfesh b'maso, what does it mean yifashfesh b'maso? Does it mean find the cause and effect relationship? I stubbed my toe, or I walked to the wrong neighbor. Fine, I have the answer. So what are we saying? That there is a cause and effect relationship between everything that happens and everything which I do.
Right.
So we are describing a perfect system. Does this perfect system exist? Okay. Is that what we are saying, that the perfect system does exist? So I'm telling you no.
So then why do we do it?
We do it because it's our obligation
to try to
as
see it?
Jews to take every event and derive benefits from it, become a better human being. That is our obligation. Does that have to coincide with the absolute truth? Who says?
But maybe you come to the wrong conclusion.
It's a tactic.
If you come to the wrong conclusion, then you didn't part from the right basis. The right basis has to be, I have to become a better Jew. For instance, if I stub my toe on the way to Rav Eliashuv, right, and I say, oh, that means that it's not good to attach yourself to Gdoilim, then you came to the wrong conclusion. So, obviously, that is not what Hashem wants you to do. Right? But if I stub my toe on the way to a movie, and I say, obviously I shouldn't be, then it's the right conclusion. Now, how do I know that this is right and this is wrong? Maybe it's the other way around. Because I part from the principle that a Jew has to be a good Jew. He has to go to Rav Eliashuv and not to the movie. You understand what I mean? Do you follow what I'm saying? You part from a certain accepted principle.
So the Yifashvesh b'maasov doesn't mean that to try to find the cause of the thing, but just to do something that...
Don't waste your experiences. That's what it means.
To do something to improve.
Exactly.
So why do I have to really be mafashish to look too hard? I can just I'll learn another black.
No, because there is, as far as human nature is concerned, there is a susceptibility to connections. You react better to connections. Why not? I walk to the wrong place. And I stubbed my toe. Why not? That, because I have to deal with my own humanity, I know that works. Those connections work by me. But if I say no connection, I stubbed my toe, therefore I should learn another blood gemara. No, I mean that, since I don't sense the connection.
I'm not going to find out anyhow what the real reason why I stubbed my toe.
Of course not. That's the whole point.
So why might
as well. Because that is the system that you have to develop in yourself. You have to develop an educational system for yourself. How do you become? You have to use situations to become an incentive for you to become a better Jew. If you don't do it, you won't have the incentive. So let it be either the davening Rosh Hashanah or when I stub my toe. So the Gemara says it's an obligation, because since men naturally, psychologically, are vulnerable to that, use it. Because right away when you do stub your toe, you say, oh no, why did it happen to me? So since there is a psychological need to get an answer, use it to become a better Jew. Fool yourself. You understand what I mean? You know, the Gemara says you have to fool your Yetzer Hora. You have to trick your Yetzer Hora. You are tricking your Yetzer Hora. Your Yetzer Hora will become weaker because you stub your toe. Use it out! Yes, dear.
So, Saif does a massacre in Beijing. Saif, the advice is not, but we both have to get the advice of Nira.
100%, of course. Of course. Yifashvesh means any event in the world, right? Which might have a psychological relationship to something that we do, should be used out. That's our obligation. What?
You should listen to the radio.
It works from the other direction also. Not just that any event is affected by the general matzav that we're in, but all the specific time, they also affect the general matzav. So a chol teshuva, when a rav in a shkuna says, a tragedy befell our shkuna because of what we've done here. That's true.
Mayav is 100%. It's not sheker, chas v'shalom. I don't mean sheker. I mean, it's true, because ultimately our becoming good would change the situation. Tzadikim wouldn't die. You understand? I mean, of course. It's not Chas V'Shalom sheker. It's just that you are choosing the which MS to use, right? The best MS that will work best.
Can you address in the waning minutes here that some of the Holocaust is a uniquely emotion laden issue? It remains and probably will stay that way for the duration of our lives, because there will be survivors and children of survivors, and I mean the implications are going to remain. And as I said, it's highly emotional. Can you explain how you can apply this analysis, which certainly is applicable, but how would you have to tailor it in order to overcome?
You have to dilute the emotions. It's very important to say, listen, it's a terrible question, and we really have no answers. But remember, the question is the same whether it's 6 million Jews or a little child who had an accident. It's interesting, even though logically, right, they'll see it, emotionally they'll have a difficult time transferring it, but if you bring them to an intellectual level, they'll be forced to come along with you, to think of the Holocaust in terms of it's being an accident or a little child. You see what I mean? So you try in your lecture, okay, then they may go home and the emotions will again take over, but at least in your lecture, you diluted the emotions by transferring it to a purely intellectual level. So again, you have to stress it. Of course, we have no answers, but let's talk about it in an abstract terms, not in terms of 6 million of our own relatives dying or being killed. Let's not talk that way. Just talk in general. So in that, you may succeed.
Would you introduce as well the second of the two? The first approach, I understand, we have criticized very strongly. The second approach that we suggested, you said, had some justification. Would you introduce that as well, to say that the culpability over here lies with man, and that Hashem has given us a world...
No
one who is angry at God because of the Holocaust would deny free will.
Exactly.
Those same people will affirm very strongly that people have free will and God won't tell me what to do and I'll be my own person and I'll find my own truth. So I would think that we could deflect it a little bit, as people have suggested. The question is not where was God, but where was man.
Exactly.
So would you introduce that as well?
Yes, I do. But I point out the flaw, which is, so why didn't God intervene to stop their free will? So that is as much a question as why was there an earthquake in Afghanistan? Once we go away from man.
That's a good approach. To begin with this, with saying the question is not where is God, but where is man. And then the bigger question is where is God in an earthquake. And that question we can resolve satisfactorily.
Yes,
according to this.
Yes, right, correct. That's okay. Chapter 6.
Thank you.